The Red Eye Radio podcast is a service of Freightliner and Detroit.
Now, it's Red Eye Radio. Gary McNamara and Eric Harley talk about everything from politics to social issues and news of the day. Whether you're up late or you're just starting your day, welcome to the show. This is Red Eye Radio.
All across America, 866-90-RED-EYE. He is Eric Harley, and I'm Gary McNamara. Thank you so much for being here this morning, as Eric and I are in the process of triggering everybody out there. By the way, the update on the whole Jay-Z thing. Jim Garrity's column in National Review. The response that has been given, Jay-Z now partnering with the NFL,
right,
to promote social justice reform and halftime shows,
right.
I'm sorry, I laugh every time I hear that, and the left has gone crazy on it. Jay-Z said, I think we forget that Colin Kaepernick's whole thing was to bring attention to social injustice, correct? So in that case, this is a success. This is the next thing, because there's two parts to protesting. You go outside and protest, and then the company or the individual says, I hear you, what do we do next? So for me, it was like action, actionable item. What are we going to do with it? Everyone heard, and we hear what you're saying, and everybody knows I agree with what you're saying. So what are we going to do? So we should, millions and millions of people, and we all got stuck on Colin not having a job. I think we're past kneeling. I think it's time for action. And that's what he said. And as Jim Garrity writes, Jay-Z's agreeing to be a lucrative partnership with the NFL was sufficient provocation for some progressive African-American writers to compare him to Judas. At the root, Angela Helm writes that Jay-Z has received half of his 30 pieces of silver amid rumors that Jay-Z will soon acquire a significant ownership interest in an NFL team. Former ESPN host Jemele Hill called Jay-Z an accomplice in the NFL's hypocrisy and charged Jay-Z has given the NFL exactly what it wanted, guilt-free access to black audiences, culture, entertainers, and influencers.
Yeah. All right.
Carolina Panthers safety Eric Reed, perhaps the current player most vocal in his support for Kaepernick, said, we had no beef with the NFL until they started perpetuating the systematic oppression that we are fighting by blackballing Colin and then me. Nah, I won't quit playing, but I will be a royal pain in the NFL's posterior for acting like they care about people of color by forming numerous disingenuous partnerships to address social injustice while collectively blackballing Colin Kaepernick, the person who brought oppression and social injustice to the forefront of the NFL platform. And as he writes here, Jim Garrity, in the eyes of the African-American social justice left, any NFL partnership with Jay-Z, any roundtable discussions, and any public awareness campaigns are mere window dressing to obscure their past unjust actions and viewpoints. Injustice best exemplified by the treatment of Kaepernick. The more the NFL does to try to win over those critics, the more the critics will loudly denounce those efforts as bad faith or cynical public relations effort. In this mindset, social justice means Kaepernick playing again, and any outcome without that element cannot constitute true social justice. Yeah. And we also said, and the kneeling continues.
Yes.
Yes.
And so you're not going to close the door on this. I don't care who it is. They're not going to close the door.
Right. They view Kaepernick as somebody who is a talented star, but as Jim Garrity said, he says, you know, Kaepernick's 31, hasn't played since 2016. And in his last full season, he lost his job as a starting quarterback to Blaine Gabbert twice. Since that season, Gabbert has gone on to be a third-string quarterback for the Arizona Cardinals and a benched backup for the Tennessee Titans. He is currently competing for the backup quarterback job for the Tampa Bay Buccaneers. A few quarterbacks can play well into their 30s. Brady is 41, but it is likely the Kaepernick's best years are behind him. Most NFL teams are in the mode to win now or are rebuilding for the future. Kaepernick isn't good enough to help a team that's built to win now, and he's probably too old to be a building block for the future, which is actually a great point.
Right.
And they're noticeably, or as they said, NFL teams, owners undoubtedly are reluctant to sign Kaepernick in part because of his controversial viewpoints and fears that fans would stay away and perhaps some owners would refuse to sign him out of personal animosity stemming from the quarterback's view. And they write this. This made me laugh. For example, it's easy to understand why the Miami Dolphins would be reluctant to sign a player who defended Fidel Castro and enraged South Florida's Cuban-American community. See, people forget about that. They always forget about
that.
Yeah,
right.
We have it. If Kaepernick were guaranteed to play on the level of Tom Brady or Patrick Mahomes in the coming season, some team somewhere would put aside fears of controversy and gamble that the fans they lost as a result of Kaepernick's public stances would be more than offset by fans gravitating to them because of the wins that would probably come from a quarterback capable of a season of 4,000 passing yards and 40 touchdown passes, which isn't going to happen with Kaepernick.
No. But
look, the other thing is your locker room, too.
Mm-hmm.
You know, we've talked about how, and I noticed it especially this year, how so many of the teams have taken to their own Facebook page, their own Twitter page, and they're doing their own videos, and they're putting them all over social media so fans can see them. And what are a lot of these videos? It's not just about practice. It's about getting to know the players, seeing the players in the community, seeing the players visiting different charities, visiting kids at schools, visiting police departments, visiting fire departments, going out and talking to first responders, becoming part of the community and emphasizing that this is about unity. And right. And that's, you know, that's the key of what the NFL is doing on one end. On the other end, you know, bringing Jay-Z in, which we said, okay, that's probably going to fail because the left is just going to scream bloody murder over that one, because what you have to understand is they're never going to be satisfied.
No, it's not. It's once, well, you've essentially the NFL has taken another step, but not just any step. They think they're creating a buffer in Jay-Z, right? That Jay-Z will just be the target. Well, no. The target's always going to be the NFL, and you're not closing the door just because you bring in this huge name, someone who's very popular.
But two points. One that we brought up before, and this goes to, let me get to this here in the article that they had in here, because I thought it was really a great point that was being made, because they talked to I can't find it here.
Mm.
They go to a professor who they talked about who said, well, wait a minute. If, why would Kaepernick want to play and take their money? If the NFL is this bad, why is Reed still playing and taking their money?
Right.
Why is Jay-Z any worse for taking their money? The three players that are currently protesting, you're taking their money. You're doing what you think is the right thing. He's doing what he thinks is the right thing. You're not quitting. You're not protesting and quitting your job. You've said you're not going to do it. Oh, here it is.
Hmm.
Stephen Carter, Yale law professor and former clerk to Thurgood Marshall, asks, quote, if Jay-Z shouldn't take the NFL's money, why should the players?
Right.
Surely by accepting annual salaries that in some cases are in the eight-figure range, they're betraying the same principles.
Mm-hmm.
And we said the same thing about Kaepernick. Why did Kaepernick ever settle with the NFL? Out of court.
You just proved it's about money.
Right.
It's not about your cause.
The whole purpose was to expose the NFL, and you didn't do it for a payday.
Yeah. No. No, no, no.
Yeah. Jay-Z contended that African Americans and their allies were past kneeling. Quite a few voices, including Kaepernick, vehemently argued that they aren't. That next step after symbolic protest is always more difficult and perhaps to some frightening. Well, I don't think Kaepernick ever wanted to get past. Look, the far left doesn't want to get past the protest. They don't want to get to solutions.
No, no.
Once you say, we're going to come to solutions and we're going to work this out, then you just become a pawn of either the the white privilege plutocracy of the NFL.
Is there such a thing?
I had to say. I just had a. I wanted to use plutocracy. I haven't used it in a while.
So. Yeah, that's good.
But we've talked about this many times before. How the left really doesn't want to solve the problems, because once you solve the problems, what do you protest about?
Right.
Or once you decide we're going to cooperate with someone, once you say, okay, we're past the protest, let's work at doing something. Well, when you work at doing something, what are those things that are being done? Those are done behind the scenes.
Right.
You're not dividing people, you're uniting people.
Mm-hmm.
We've told you what the left is about. The left is about creating more victims and more oppressors. If you decide, as Jay-Z has done, whether you agree with him or not, but if you say, okay, it's time to move past the protest, and I believe that as a cultural icon of the young, both black and probably every other ethnicity out there, correct?
Yeah, I would say.
Very popular. Right, of young people, that I'm the one that can help move it in the right direction. And their point is, no, Kaepernick has to play quarterback now, or it doesn't mean anything. Well, right. Wait a minute. You weren't protesting Kaepernick to begin with. You were protesting. I thought this was about police brutality.
Yeah.
Then it expanded to Cuba. Then it expanded to the promotion of communism. It does what everything does on the left. It keeps expanding the protest out to things that eventually have nothing to do with what you were originally protesting about.
Right. Yeah. It's not going to end. I think it has the potential to bring it all back to a point that the NFL doesn't want it to reach again. I think that's a very real concern. Because imagine with Kaepernick wasn't a popular player. He became popular because of the kneeling. Now you brought Jay-Z into the picture, who's extremely popular, and now you bring back the whole idea of the protest again, right? The time for kneeling is over. Now it's time for action. Well, what action?
I'm waiting for somebody. How come, you know, we called out Kaepernick. Why doesn't Jay-Z call out Kaepernick and say, look, you're calling me hypocritical? You sold out.
Mm-hmm.
You said you were suing the NFL to expose them. You made a deal. You went after the money. You're a hypocrite. I'm actually trying to solve problems by working with the NFL. Will that come out, or are they just going to ignore Kaepernick? Because now he works for the NFL. Do you want to have the direct confrontation? Because now he's a representative. Now he works for the NFL. Now Jay-Z is the NFL. So the NFL owners may just say, no, we're going to work behind the scenes. We're going to do podcasts. I like that one. That was
right.
That one.
Mm-hmm.
And we'll have all these different discussions, and in essence, it will disappear.
Yeah. We'll make it go away.
Right. But we've got halftime entertainment set for the next 10 years.
Yeah. Good luck with that.
Because in reality, the NFL is not about solving the social problems of the world.
No.
The NFL is about playing football.
Which it should be.
And making money playing football. And in the meantime, because of that, part of the product that they also sell, as they are finding out, is uniting communities together.
Yep.
That's what it's about.
Mm-hmm.
That's part of the product that they sell. Yep. That's just the reality of what sports does and what sports markets. And that's what they wish to get back to.
Mm-hmm. And they should.
So it will be interesting to see what happens over the next little bit. I don't know. I don't notice. We've brought it up just because we've covered it from the very beginning. I don't hear a lot of buzz about Kaepernick on social media. I don't see it.
No, but you will about Jay-Z, I think.
Jay-Z, probably, yeah. Maybe I'm completely wrong. Maybe I'm reading this wrong. I just have this feeling that, okay, Kaepernick's, okay. Mm. He's done.
Well, I mean, I guess the only hope would be to morph it into something else, right? To the point where at the end of the season, you can say, I'm so old, I remember when we were all talking about Kaepernick kneeling during the national anthem. I mean, that's what you would hope to do if you're the NFL. Change it completely. Change the nature of it completely. That's redirection.
Yeah.
To the point that people say, Kaepernick who?
Yeah.
And it feels like social justice. It looks like social justice. But it's the commercialized social justice that organizations like the NFL get behind. We support equality for blah, 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 and all these big generic and general terms. That really go nowhere. We're going to be working in the community. Jay-Z will actually be stopping in to a community at some point and getting out of his limousine. He won't talk to anybody, but he's going to get out of his limousine.
Right. And we're going to promote discussion. Well, that's fine. I mean, discussion's right. Always been going on.
Right.
Like discussion on police brutality wouldn't have happened if Kaepernick didn't kneel.
Right, exactly.
Of course it would have.
Yes.
866-90-RUD-EYE.
You're pumped for summer, but are your tires? As the temperature rises, so does the importance of tire maintenance. The key to staying on the road this summer is to stay on top of routine tire inspections. Inspecting your tires regularly for proper inflation and tread depth is essential to tire performance and increasing your vehicle's safety. Regular tire checks can also help you detect other issues and maintenance that may be necessary. Irregular tread wear, for example, could indicate your tire alignment is off, which can affect the performance, safety, and lifespan of the tires. Catching and correcting issues early on is the key to long tire life. Stop into a TA truck service near you for all of your tire service needs today.
This maintenance tip is brought to you by TA Truck Service. More bays, more expertise, more solutions.
Get in touch with Red Eye Radio, toll free at 866-90-RED-EYE.
It's Red Eye Radio. He's Eric. I'm Gary. Just reading The Nation, the longest running liberal publication in America.
Right.
Talking about the whole Jay-Z thing in the NFL. None of this is about social justice. It's not about, as Jay-Z puts it, helping millions and millions of people. This partnership is happening because Jay-Z is a billionaire who wants to be an NFL owner, and erasing Colin Kaepernick is a price of admission. Now Jay-Z can get to multiply his fortune, and the NFL believes they will no longer be branded as racist or, and this is my favorite part of this paragraph, or have to schedule skim milk Super Bowl halftime shows headlined by Maroon 5.
Yeah.
Oh, man. So,
and
they go through all the pounding, you know, from the left.
Well,
on Jay-Z on this whole thing.
Well, so. Again, I guess Jay-Z didn't see that coming, or he doesn't care. If this gets him to ownership, if this gets him in the door to ownership, right? You know, this kind of, I don't know, do you call this goodwill?
Well,
or house cleaning?
They made the point, and this is a great, they said probably the commissioner and the NFL owners high-fiving as Jay-Z takes all the flack.
Yeah, no, I mean, he's the, like I said before, he's the buffer.
Yeah.
So if he's the buffer, then that's on him. I mean, how he handles it will be on him. And how do you excuse that away? You basically, if you're the NFL, look, we trust Jay-Z to take this project and this movement. And really, he is a leader in this regard. And we know of his leadership. And we're going to be over here in the office. And good luck, Jay-Z, and good night. And you pass it on. He's the buffer. And you're hoping, look, best case scenario, everybody loves, at the end of it, everybody still loves Jay-Z and everybody still loves the NFL.
He becomes an owner. The NFL is more progressive.
He buys the Bills and he moves them to a different town. Right?
What?
your nightly companion for trolls, shut-ins, and ne'er-do-wells. Red Eye Radio.
And he is Eric Harley, and I'm Gary McNamara, 866-90-RED-EYE. Thanks so much for being here this morning. A lot of debate on the 24/7 news channels yesterday about Tlaib's and Omar's, Representative Tlaib and Omar's, press conference that they held, the fact that, you know, they weren't allowed to go to Israel and all that. Something that you and I talked about and said, look, as far as we're concerned, they should be speaking everywhere, because the more they speak, the more damage they do to their side.
Right.
When you look at this entire thing, though, and I was watching part of the just got into screaming. I mean, it's nonsensical. It was Peter Beinart talking to I can't think of his name. Rich Lowry.
Yeah. Okay.
And Beinart was screaming. Rich Lowry wasn't. He couldn't get any words in. Look, it's a situation of, we know where Israel is. You know, that for Tlaib and Omar to come out and say that they're not a democracy, Israel, I mean, just is completely and totally bizarre. And the people that they are associated with are terrorists. Okay, they have committed, and now what you're seeing is a justification that, yes, but Palestine is oppressed by Israel. The reason that you have a situation there, though, as we know, is you have Israel, which is a democracy that is surrounded by countries and by people that don't want them to exist. That is a fact. Yeah. The BDS is well known that they don't want Israel to exist. Now, we have people in the United States that don't wish the United States didn't exist and has no right to exist as we do, and we still let them speak because it doesn't go anywhere. But you are in an area, as we said earlier, if I'm in Israel, in all likelihood, I probably would have said, okay, they can come, but let's get ready for what they're going to do. But the other thing is, I think that part of the fear of Israel is that Tlaib and Omar, remember, they said they weren't going to Israel. They were going to go to, Palestine territory. That's where they were going to go.
Right.
They weren't going to Israel.
Right.
I think that there is a fear of Israel that Tlaib and Omar can motivate terrorism, can legitimize and motivate terrorism, that they are too well-known now,
mm-hmm.
Congress people, members of the federal government, who would get a ton of publicity and would do nothing but encourage those who wish to commit terrorist acts against Israel to do so. That's, nobody's having a discussion on this, because it seems like anybody who was defending, whether it's Beinart, whether it's, I can't think of his name, from Geraldo Rivera.
Mm-hmm.
They're screaming in anger as if you can never have a discussion on it. But I believe that's what Israel is afraid of. I believe they're afraid of these two congresspeople going over there and, in essence, giving credibility to terrorist acts, official credibility, because they are U.S. congresspeople,
yes,
citing officially.
Right.
And the cartoonist that came out, the cartoon that they used and distributed, which is from I can't think of the person's name here, that is well known to promote terrorism and deny the Holocaust,
mm-hmm.
that you're dealing with people that are absolutely anti-Semitic and want Israel wiped off the face of the earth. And the last thing that Israel wants is two officially sanctioned members of the federal government of the United States encouraging it.
Right. I mean, it sets, if you think about the number of issues that it brings about, the first of all, in the disinformation campaign that it would be, because a number of people in that region, while I'm sure a lot of them are well versed, you can't discount the fact that two United States representatives would be there officially calling for, you know, that kind of behavior or whatever it might be.
Not directly calling for
No. Not calling for a war, not calling for anything else, but promoting what is already there.
Encouraging what is already there. That you have a friend, official friend in the United States that will work in...
That is anti-Israel.
That is anti-Israel, that agrees with you, wink, wink, nudge, nudge.
And believes Israel is wrong in their position,
right,
and which is indirectly encouraging certain behaviors.
And Israel does not have a right to exist. Remember, as it was pointed out, I think it was Shapiro pointed out, or somebody pointed out yesterday, that Nancy Pelosi even said... Their whole opinion on BDS is anti, you know, is anti-Semitic,
right?
Without question,
yes.
That's the leader of the Democrat Party. Now they really don't care what she thinks anymore. But I do think Israel does have, and again, I can say that I believe they should be able to freely speak anywhere. But if you're in Israel and you know that they're going to go across there, and because if you help legitimize the radical movement over there. And you give it legitimacy by two congresspeople taking your side, that you will give an incentive to increase terrorist acts and keep the tension between the Palestinians and Israel continuing, and therefore make it harder to get a solution down the road.
Yes. At the very least.
Right.
I mean, it creates chaos and really gives it some credibility because of their official status, who they are. I mean, it really is. You're welcoming that kind of chaos, and it is not. It is anything but productive. I mean, it is something that could tear down a number, I guess, of discount, I guess, efforts that are already in place, not toward peace, but maintaining. A situation in that region that again is about as sensitive as it gets. The last thing you want is two U.S. representatives going in and speaking the way they would definitely speak. If someone in the general public in that region sees that, they're not going to know. They may not know who they are. They'll just know that they're U.S. representatives. They may not know the backstory.
Oh, I think they're becoming very well known now.
Well, they are now,
right?
But my point is, they're being. In fact, they're well known now. Why? Because they're blocked from going there,
right?
But if they were to show up, if they were allowed to go, and they were just to show up, someone's watching that. Someone's seeing that in the news. They're just going to see two U.S. representatives, and now you've got a very strong ally, the ally of allies of Israel, two representatives creating chaos with their words. Tell me where that goes. It's not in a positive direction. Israel is right to keep them from going.
And that is the concern that really, those that are promoting the fact that Israel is completely wrong, it's understanding the situation, the tenuous situation that they're always in over there. But as we said, if you reverse, as we started earlier in the show and said, if you reversed it and you had, if it was Republicans saying the things that they have said and associating with the people that they've associated with by the Democrat standard of what is unacceptable, if it was the Republicans doing it, the Democrats would be absolutely up in arms over it. And as you notice, a lot of the time we say by the Democrat standard, because it's very important. We want to make sure that we compare apples to apples.
Right.
And you do that by saying, what's the Democrat standard?
They write their own rules and playbook.
How they view Trump as a white supremacist without evidence. How they view Trump was a traitor and colluded with the Russians to hack the election without any evidence. By their standard, because that's their standard. Well, then Tlaib and Omar should be impeached from office.
Yes.
Should not serve in office by the Democrat standard. 866-90-RED-EYE.
Get in touch with Red Eye Radio, toll free at 866-90-RED-EYE.
It's Red Eye Radio. He's Eric Carly, and I'm Gary McNamara, 866-90, or Red Eye. You ready?
I don't know.
A cast member in The Godfather sounded off on CNN anchor Chris Cuomo.
Yeah.
Following his viral Fredo rant, Gianni Russo, who played Vito Corleone's wife-abusing son-in-law, Carlo, in the 1972 mobster movie, in a recent interview, he shared his thoughts on Cuomo's intense, profanity-filled rant after someone referred to him as Fredo. They went on and did the whole thing, the expletive-filled rant from Cuomo. Oh. I started laughing when I saw it. Russo, who said he's friends with the Cuomo family, told TMZ he was surprised that Chris would equate being called Fredo with an affront to the Italian people. His father would smack him. Russo said of the late former Governor Mario Cuomo, "I couldn't understand because he's such an intelligent kid, educated in everything else. I heard he's hurt his career," the 75-year-old actor explained. "All these news guys, they're so opinionated," Russo continued. "They're supposed to report the news. It's not about what you think. And you're taking Fredo, a character from a classic? It's like spitting on the Mona Lisa."
Well, I don't know if it's quite like spitting on the Mona Lisa.
Oh, man. So,
remember what happened to Carlo?
Yes.
Yeah. After,
yeah,
being abusive toward his wife.
Yes.
His wife, who just happened to be, Michael's sister.
Yes. Yeah, he got it in the car, right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Don't worry, nothing's going to happen to you. Until you get in the car.
you're talking about the kicking out the windshield.
Yeah. Yes.
Scene. Yes.
Right. Yeah. Talia Shires was the wife in that case. Yeah.
Yeah.
Was Carlo's wife.
Yes.
Played Carlo's wife.
Yes. Don't worry, nothing's going to happen to you.
Yeah.
I'm not going to do anything to my, you know, sister's husband.
Right. Yeah. Yeah. I would never do that.
Yeah.
Why don't you just go for a ride with all of my guys who do my hits for me? Just a nice Sunday drive with guys who do nothing but kill people for me. It'll be fine. Sit in the front seat.
And finally, I got to get this story in. A senior advisor to Bernie Sanders' 2020 presidential campaign said Monday that there's a problem with former Vice President Joe Biden. What's his greatest vulnerability? His pro-corporate policies. Over and over again, he has supported pro-corporate policies, which hurt this working-class community, Sanders' advisor told, Jeff Weaver told Hill TV during an interview. So there you go. Weaver pointed out to Biden's support as a senator for the 2005 bankruptcy bill and his backing of the free trade deal, NAFTA, as two prime examples.
Hmm.
Sanders' advisor predicted the voters will start to move away from Biden over the next few months as Biden continues to roll out his campaign platform. Can't be pro-corporate, right? Can't be pro-corporate. You have to be anti-corporation.
Well, I mean, you do. You have to go the full measure to tear them down over and over again. It's the only way you get something done. Not that they're going to end corporations, but this is the hope is that corporate taxes, because if they can build this kind of sentiment again, which, by the way, won't take long. You already have it going on the left, that's a given, then raising corporate taxes will be a given because we're going to punish them. They forget the math, or they ignore the math, that and the very fact that corporations don't pay taxes, the consumer pays the taxes. So here you have the, you know, the, again, the effort that continues in the direction of anti-capitalism, anti-free markets. Profits are bad. Let's destroy corporations. If we can't destroy them, let's just tax them more. It's political leverage in the event that they do win in 2020.
Let's get to the third debate.
Yes. Oh, my gosh. Who's going to make it to the debate is my question.
This is Red Eye Radio on Westwood One. Now, it's Red Eye Radio. Gary McNamara and Eric Harley talk about everything from politics to social issues and news of the day. Whether you're up late or just starting your day, welcome to the show. From the Pilot Flying J Studios, this is Red Eye Radio.
All across America and the world, RedEyeRadioShow.com. We stream everywhere. And get our app today where you can listen 24/7. That's right, our podcast. All right, in the news, this may not be the most important story, but I thought it was an important story because it's the first time I have seen any major, former major Hollywood star seemed to endorse a candidate, Susan Sarandon.
Uh-oh.
Appeared to take a shot at Senator Elizabeth Warren on Monday during a Bernie Sanders presidential campaign in Iowa. He, quote, "He is not someone who used to be a Republican," Sarandon told the crowd during her introduction of Sanders, where she also listed progressive issues long supported by the Vermont senator. Sarandon, a Bernie supporter, didn't mention Warren by name, but the Massachusetts senator was a registered Republican in the mid-1990s. "I was a Republican because I thought that those were the people that best supported markets," Warren told Politico in 2011. "I think that is not true anymore. I was a Republican at a time when I felt like there was a problem that the markets were under a lot more strain. It worried me whether or not government played too activist of a role." She is really clueless, isn't she?
Yeah.
She really is. Did you hear she apologized again yesterday for the whole pretending she was a Native American?
Right. Yeah, she had to. Yeah.
And who was it? I was reading, I can't remember who it was. Somebody on the left took a shot at her, says she can't be doing that because Trump's going to pound her on that. If she's a nominee, he's just going to pound on it. It is really her one weak thing that is in the middle of popular culture. Because all you have to do is say, if you will lie about your ethnicity, won't you lie about?
Right.
And that will have an impact. There you go. You've got Susan Sarandon, the first one out of the gate. Now, Michael Moore, has he endorsed any candidate? We had him on. We played an audio cut from him yesterday where he was supporting. He said that if the Democrats support the philosophy of AOC, Tlaib, and Omar, that will shoot them to victory because that's what the American public wants.
I don't know. The closest you could get, well, would have been Bernie, but I don't know for sure from him, right? Because it's not going to be Elizabeth Warren.
I would ask Susan Sarandon why she's supporting the white man.
Right. The old white guy.
The old white guy, right.
Not that old white guy, the other old white guy.
The socialist guy.
Yeah.
Oh, man.
Yeah, yeah. You don't support people of color. You don't support LGBTQ. How dare you, Ms. Sarandon?
I know. I tell you, they all fail us, don't they?
They do.
They all fail us. President Trump on Monday called for the Federal Reserve to sharply cut interest rates a full point. And again, criticized the central bank's chairman for horrendous lack of vision while reiterating his belief that the U.S. economy is strong. He said that the Fed should cut its benchmark interest rate by a full percentage point. That'd be 2.25% to 1.25%, correct?
Yeah. Yeah, so I didn't know how to process that. At first, it was like, well, there goes the president again. But when you break it down into the substance of what he said, a full percentage point, if the Fed chairman came out and announced they were going to drop interest rates a full point, the markets would be reeling.
And they should resume the buying of bonds to lower long-term borrowing costs. And as everybody immediately said, well, you'd only do that if you think you were headed towards a recession.
Right. That's not an adjustment. That is a Hail Mary of a move. I just don't know, it would be a massive, massive indicator or set of indicators, collective data that would show that it have to show something really bad.
Let's put it this way. If it was the week of the bubble where we knew that everything was crashing, okay?
Right.
If we go back to 2009,
mm-hmm.
and it's the week that all of that is happening.
Yeah.
If you said it at that point, that would make sense. That was the thing that it was interesting because yesterday and Sunday was a day that, you know, we need to... why are the media talking about a recession?
Right.
And if you're talking about a recession, it's fake news. Now, I don't know of anybody who has said we are going into a recession. The concern of the question has been asked, are we headed towards a recession? What are the economic indicators out there? Now, maybe somebody on the left on MSNBC or CNN probably said we're in a depression. So, I mean, that probably happened. Okay. I'm talking about reasonable economists. Boy, I've really, really, really shrunk the list now, haven't I?
Yeah, right.
I really have shrunk the list. I don't think anybody really knows as we did. And a few people misinterpreted what we were talking about. I think it was on Friday.
Mm-hmm.
When we broke it down and we said, look, here's and we did it again yesterday. We did it again today. You know, here's a good thing. Consumer spending really good. Consumer spending really, really good.
Mm-hmm.
The problems are the manufacturing index and the service industry index. Service lowest in 3 years. Manufacturing back to 2009 levels. Those are things to worry about.
Right.
And so when we talked about it last week, we went, uh-oh. And then I think it was after we were off the air Friday is when the consumer spending came out. It's like, well, that's really good. Okay.
Yeah.
When you saw that, okay, so everything's a mixed bag. Where's it going? Don't know. Don't like it, though, because the one concern we have, and these are all concerns, and they're legit concerns based on what? Our opinion? No, our observation of reality.
Mm-hmm.
It's not just, well, we think it's horrible, terrible, because we do, and we're not going to tell you why. No, it's because you look at the numbers out there, and you realize that public sentiment can change quick, and obviously, you knew the administration was worried about it because they first put on the tariffs, and then anything that affected any type of consumer goods, they took the tariffs off because they wanted consumer spending through the Christmas season, because they know that's the one the one upshot right now in the, and a good upshot, because remember, two-thirds of the GDP is domestic. Mm-hmm. What we consume and what we produce domestically. So at least two-thirds of it is. And so that's extremely important. If that's looking good, you want to keep that up. The problem is that can change within a period of 2 months. And the problem with the manufacturing index and combined with the business investment index could affect the economy for 6 months to a year if it doesn't pick up, because that's more long term.
Mm-hmm. Well, and I think, again, you look at the numbers that are concerning. Factory output is a huge concern. And how much of that, we were asking the other day, how much of that is about uncertainty? Because it's one thing to be in a point where you're clearly in a recession and the spending has gone down. If you look at what's going on right now, a couple of different fronts globally, obviously in the United States, what's going to happen between the U.S. and China, and then also on Brexit, what's going to happen there? There's a ton of uncertainty, and that can affect future planning or investment. And so that if that investment slows, there can be a huge hit there. And, of course, with the tariffs in place, that can affect factory output. The dollar, the rise of the dollar, can slow factory output. And we saw that back in 2014, 2015. And then it has the effect on the transportation industry, specifically trucking, in taking those things from the factory to their destination.
Well, politically, it was to us a sense of confusion with the last 2 days going after the president, going after his critics and saying, look, if you're talking recession, that's fake news. Mm-hmm. And then the president coming out and unveiling what he thinks should be done, which is a policy which would only be done if you thought the economy might be going into a recession.
Right.
Which blew our minds. Now, I had a response earlier. Well, maybe the president's doing it in order to negotiate with China. Well, he hasn't said that.
No. No.
And it would still have the same effect if he said that.
Mm-hmm.
It would still be, whoa, what are you talking about? So is the thought process that you cut the interest rate almost in half and therefore devalue the dollar a little bit, therefore our products, because the dollar is strong right now and therefore we may export less, and this is all, well, you're still at that point worried about a recession. It still comes back to the same thing, that you're afraid that you've got to do something of government stimulation because the economy isn't as roaring as you're claiming.
Well, and then you get into that hypocrisy thing. After blaming China for the manipulation of their currency, you're in a situation then that you would be manipulating your currency, and that's not something politically that you want to lay at your own feet.
Well, again, what I've read, because there hasn't been a lot of reporting on, you know, China when they devaluated the yuan,
mm-hmm.
but they didn't devaluate it as much as people thought they were going to do.
Right, stayed above that 7 mark. Yeah.
They stayed above the 7 mark, and the only thing I've seen is the most, and it gets quite complicated, but most economic analysis that I've seen.
Mm-hmm.
Now, there may be others out there. I haven't been privy to it. But either they're stating the fact that they don't know precisely why they chose that, or I know the Wall Street Journal, which the president has been attacking, just mm-hmm. for note, said no. China responded that China lowered the currency rate of the yuan to the American dollar because the tariffs moved it down that low. That the tariffs are the reason that they were reacting to the tariffs of the U.S. So is that what you're getting into? Right. The tariffs happen. China responds to the tariffs by lowering their currency. We respond to them lowering their currency by dropping our interest rate. But the whole point is going to the minutia of it, everybody is what? Worried about their economy. Mm-hmm. That's the point. That's the point that you eventually get to, and that's the mixed messages that the president sends the market. Now, the president didn't say that because he wanted a better negotiating ploy or whatever with China. But it's, again, gets to the point of what we've always been against. Well, we can manipulate the government can manipulate the economy to a success.
Right.
And you can't. You might be able to use it as a negotiating ploy. Maybe you can win. Maybe you don't win. We don't know yet. Mm-hmm. And right now, all we know is both sides have lost. Mm-hmm. And that's the reality of where we are. But when the president's out there stating over and over again that anybody who's talking about recession is putting out fake news, and then he unveils a policy wish that you would only do if you believed we were going into a recession, you throw up your hands and say, I don't know what to do. I don't know.
Right.
I can't figure out the messaging or what's going on inside of the White House, except as I've always thought, it is sort of a pinball machine where he goes back, the pinball heads, over to Navarro and bounces off of that past Ross, past Mnuchin, and then backs down to the Larry Kudlow flipper
before
who flips it back up and
before the whole machine tilts.
Before the whole machine tilts, yeah. Well, I mean, I don't know what else to say because there's such contradictory messages constantly coming out of the White House that you just throw up your hands and you say, do you understand that all you're doing is creating this aura of complete uncertainty? You're saying one thing and accusing people of fake news for the one thing, which, by the way, if people are saying we are going into recession, would be fake news. I want to make that clear.
Right.
If they are stating that. If people are saying, there are some numbers we should be concerned about, that's not fake news. There are numbers we should be concerned about.
Yeah, sure.
But then to come out with a policy that you would only enact if you were going into a recession or a wish list policy.
Mm. Yeah.
You just throw up your hands.
Yeah, it is, and it's chaos. It's communication chaos.
866-90-RED-EYE.
USDA meteorologist Brad Rippey says corn condition declined slightly in the week ending August 18th.
Now 56% good to excellent and 14% very poor to poor. That's a 1-point change from last week's 57% and 13% respectively, and far below last year's 68% good to excellent and 12% very poor to poor.
In the Midwest,
we see at least 1/5 of the acreage rated in very poor to poor condition in Indiana, Michigan, Missouri, and Ohio.
With corn crop development,
hard to believe. Here we are past mid-August and still talking about corn silking. But we're at 95% for the nation as a whole. Five-year average, 99%. Last year, 100% silking.
Corn at the dough stage is 55% nationwide compared to the five-year average of 76%, while corn at the dense stage is 15% nationwide compared with the five-year average of 30%. This is Stephanie Ho for the U.S. Department of Agriculture in Washington, D.C.
The USDA report is brought to you by Cenex Roadmaster XL Premium Highway Diesel Fuel.
Lines open for your calls. 866-90-RED-EYE on Red Eye Radio.
It's Red Eye Radio. He is Eric Carley, and I'm Gary McNamara, 866-90-RED-EYE. I saw the president tweeted out here in the last 24 hours about the Zogby poll that showed him at 51% favorability rating. You know, he and Fox News going back and forth at it a little bit. Brett Baer yesterday telling the president, hey, you're going on the other shows. Come on our show. You know, you're criticizing us. We haven't really changed at all, but the president criticizing the poll. But the president actually does have a legit beef on the polls that we've talked about, and this latest Zogby poll backs up what we've been saying all along. We'll get to that next.
Here's your forecast.
Areas likely to receive severe weather today include the state of Nebraska, northern Kansas, a good portion of Illinois and Indiana, as well as sections of eastern Missouri and southeastern Iowa. That stalled stationary front will also bring showers into Kentucky and Tennessee throughout the day, and look for a good swath of the Carolinas to pick up some precip, as well as portions of the Northeast, as those afternoon showers begin to develop today. 5 to 7 day rain totals not showing any showers for the entire state of California, Nevada, Utah, or Idaho. We will see the most rain, however, according to the 7 day outlook, in the Gulf region from New Orleans over to the Florida Panhandle. Central Georgia could pick up an inch of rain this week, and then wet weather up the I-95 corridor on and off throughout your week ahead. There's your national forecast from Red Eye Radio. I'm meteorologist John Trout.
Could get very ugly very quickly. Gary McNamara and Eric Harley.
Hey.
Red Eye Radio.
That's enough.
And he's Eric Harley, and I'm Gary McNamara, 86690 Red Eye. Look, I think it's important to bring this up, since over the next year we're going to be talking about polls all the time, and the president going after Fox News the other day, the president also tweeting out the Zogby poll that showed him at 51% favorability rating. And even though I don't believe, again, that the administration communicates things effectively, there is a way to communicate this to show that there is, and, well, just to explain the polls and ask some really good questions about the pollsters out there and why they do what they do. And it's something that you and I have been talking about at least for the last two presidential elections.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And that is, why in the world are any of the pollsters polling registered voters? What is the purpose? I would ask every one of the pollsters out there, or any of these, whether it's Fox or anybody doing these polls, why are you doing them? Well, to give an indication of what the American people think. I want to know what the voter thinks.
That's it.
I want to know which is closest for, I want to know what it looks like for the people that vote. Well, you've got registered voters. You've got polls that do all Americans. And then you have polls that do registered voters. And then you have the polls that do the likely voters. By the time it gets around to, it's roughly probably about 2 months before the election, everybody switches to likely voters. And nobody's talking about registered voters anymore, right? Which then we ask the question, well, why have you been bothering with the registered voters polls for the last year and a half? What's the purpose? Right. What are the polls doing for you? Why are you putting them out? Are you putting them out, a registered voter poll out there because you know the president will poll lower in there and therefore he'll get ticked off and it will be a news story for you?
Clickbaiting.
But what is the purpose of doing it? Is it accuracy? And I would ask this to Fox News, because I think it's a question, this just hasn't come up with Trump. It's come up with us for a couple of elections out there going, well, why would you do it? What is the, and we can never get an answer. We can never get an answer. Well, why do you do it? And then switch to likely voters, which again, likely voters, I don't know exactly. It could be different for every poll. But you have a history of voting in every election or the past two or three elections, which means there's a great deal percentage more that you will go out and vote. Therefore, it's a more accurate poll.
Right.
Well, I started looking at the favorability ratings polls out there. For the favorability ratings of the president.
Right.
And the favorability ratings always show that the president, he's getting killed, right?
Yeah, yeah.
He's getting killed. Let me look at it right here. I want to get to the favorability ratings. All of a sudden, they disappeared here for me. I lost it again. Well, let me put it this way. Every single one, until I can get this computer to work correctly, every single one of the job approval, which they consider the favorability ratings, right? Job approval ratings. Every single one except Rasmussen and the Zogby poll, everyone is either all Americans or registered voters.
None are likely voters.
Only Rasmussen, right, none are likely voters. They're either all voters or registered voters. And then you look at the approval rating, the spread, and these are all registered voters or all people, not all voters. Registered voters are all people, whether you're registered or not. The president, minus 12, minus 13, minus 10, minus 10, minus 12, minus 13, minus 10. The two likely voter polls, minus 7, plus 1. So you take the you and by the way, Rasmussen that's at a minus 7, the president just a few weeks ago was at 50-49. So in the Rasmussen on likely voters, many of the times he will poll at 50. You never see it happening when they poll all voters or registered voters. So the president posted here in the last 24 hours, I believe it was, the Zogby poll that showed favorability rating 51%. As he would.
Mm-hmm.
Our beef has always been when you look at, and the same thing when you look at the, when you look at the polling that's done on even the Democrat candidates, by the way. Remember the poll that we did last week that where you said, whoa, wow, look at this. In this poll, Biden only has 20.
Right.
Remember that? And we said, wow. That was all Democrats. Not voters.
Right.
Not even registered Democrat voters. It was all voters. And when you got to the registered or the likely voters, it was all up over 30%.
Hmm.
Only the one that is all voters are way down because even on the Democrat, it gets skewed completely. Well, that's useless. Why are you even posting that? So you can be included in the polls? You're paying money to do these polls. I don't understand why you would do a poll that are the most inaccurate polls because you're trying to figure out what would happen if it all. And when they say if the election were held today, these people who wouldn't vote want this candidate. It makes no sense to me. It never has.
Yeah, I really don't know why they insist on doing that other than to get the click. Because you get closer to the election, it really then starts to be about who's accurate. No one remembers the polls in August of the year before. They only remember the polls, you know, getting up to the election time. So right now, it has to be about the clicks. When you're talking about polling all Americans, that's public sentiment. I don't care. I want to know what the voter thinks. I want to know what the people who decide think. That's what I want to know.
Right.
Public sentiment, I can get that on social media. I mean, it's more useless, I think, than just as useless as an internet poll, a web poll.
Well, it can be, because even when we talk about registered voters, even in the average presidential election, what is it? Most you get is 60 or 70%, right?
Mm.
But, of registered voters voting. Mm-hmm. So when you say you're a registered voter and we poll you, what's the sample like? Is the sample 60-40?
Right.
And that you don't know either. If it's likely voter, I know what a likely voter is. I can define precisely what a likely voter is. Right?
Yeah. Right.
And I know that voter has voted, you know, this many times over this period of
Yep.
Of or this many times over this period of time.
Based on their behavior in the past and recent past, it's likely they're going to vote. Very simple. And those are the ones you want to pull. Those are the ones, those are the minds you want to tap into. I don't care about public sentiment.
No, I care about if we look at the polls, because the whole point is, if the election were held today, well, you're doing a poll on 40% or maybe even 50, depending on whether it's all Americans, anywhere between 30 and probably 60% of those people that won't vote in the election. It doesn't make any sense.
No.
Let's go to Matt in Florence, South Carolina. Matt, welcome. You're on Red Eye Radio. Welcome. Hi, Matt.
Hey, guys. I got a little bit of an opinion on the polling. I honestly think that the news media more does it as a buildup. It's like they want to build up to a crescendo. So they take the registered voter polls and they throw those at us because they know they're going to reflect conservatives negatively. They normally do because everybody's at work and we can't be polled. And then whenever it comes time for the actual polling to come out, whenever we're getting close to the election, they switch to the likely ones so they can save face. And it's kind of like a buildup. It's almost like a movie plot. Or the most obvious thing for me is they want to go with polls that affirm their views. And so
if all conservatives are working, wouldn't the likely voter poll be more skewed?
They show more interest in it whenever it comes time to get it for the election. Like, I've never been polled in my life. Nobody's ever asked me a single polling question. But I'm not even sure how this is done.
Right, neither have I, because they poll roughly, what is it, anywhere between, normal polls are between 500 and 1,000 nationwide.
Right.
You get up to about 1,000 nationwide, and you basically have a pretty accurate sample. Because, as we said, there were two or three polls that were almost right on, dead on with the election results, numbers-wise, not Electoral College. They didn't figure out the three states, and that's probably something they should start doing right now if they can figure out a way to do it. But there are polls that were extremely close in every election. People think the polls are always off, and they're not.
No,
My point is to the last caller, mm-hmm. in the likely voter polls close to the election, they figured out how to get those people that are working.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Well, and the polls aren't going to, right now, they don't have a methodology that would cover the Electoral College. I mean, I don't know, maybe they can, they're building those algorithms in order to help them determine that, but the polls were all about what? The popular vote.
Let's go to Dusty in Indiana about the president wanting to lower the rate. Dusty, welcome. You're on Red Eye Radio. Welcome to the show.
Hey, how you doing? I'm a truck driver. I've been a driver for about 25 years now, so believe me, I know what the market forces can do to the trucking industry and other industries. But when you're talking about the president wanting the central bank to lower rates and being indicative of a recession, I think he's just pushing back. I don't think that he thinks that there's going to be a recession. I think he's pushing back against the central bank being too slow to act. We lose a half a percentage point from 3.6 to 3.1 GDP, and also other forces like the consortium of the economists that just came out yesterday and said that 33% of them people think that we're going to head into a recession. But just Rush Limbaugh just said this past day, why did they say it that way? Why didn't they say that 67% of those very same economists don't think we're going to head into a recession? Then you've got the idiot Bill Maher that says he wants a recession.
Yeah, I know, but that's got nothing to do with. Look. Anybody knows if you have any economic knowledge, the economy is not hurting because the basis point is 2.25%. We had economic growth during the Reagan administration when interest rates were much higher than they are today. So that's a bogus point to begin with. It's not the interest rate. But the president claiming that, are you trying to say he's claiming that we need to drop it a point lower because of what the media says or economists say? That would make no sense.
He's pushing back against the market forces and the central bank being too slow to act and media forces.
Well, the central
trying to talk.
Well, that well that but it's a bogus argument that the central bank, it didn't, you think it mattered whether the rate are the basis rate was 2% or 2.5? You honestly believe
that's really,
it's got nothing to do with it.
But they raised the interest rate three times in a single year when our GDP was 3.6 because they claimed it was an overheated economy. When we dropped a half a percentage point from 3.6 to 3.1, they only lowered it at a quarter percent.
Okay, but you're talking, all right, but you're talking about quarters as if the Fed should be looking at every quarter and making major changes either way. Remember, interest rates are at a record low. They've been at a record low for the last decade. Rates we've never seen before. My entire life, I could go and get a passbook and get 4 to 5% on a passbook account at a bank.
Mm-hmm.
We have such artificially low interest rates in this country, it's ridiculous. 866-90-RED-EYE.
Freightliner Team Run Smart Pro Henry Albert has achieved some very impressive fuel mileage numbers. Henry shares the specs on his truck and his trailer, starting with what's under the hood.
I'm in a 2018 Cascadia Aero X. It's powered by the integrated drivetrain Detroit Series 60 DD15, 400 horsepower, 1,750 foot-pounds of torque at 975 RPM, and that's fed into the Detroit DT12 direct drive transmission with a final axle ratio of 2.16 with active lube management, riding on Michelin X1 tires, pulling a fully aerodynamic trailer. The trailer is equipped with a nose cone. It's also equipped with full-length skirts from Fleet Engineers to go completely over the landing gear, completely over the trailer tandem, all the way to the rear bumper. The rain gutter has been plated over, and it's running a Stemco trailer tail. My main run, which is from Charlotte to Laredo, and I'm usually 60 to 65,000 pounds, I was averaging over 10 miles of the gallon. It was up to 10.1.
To learn more about Henry's fuel mileage achievements, go to TeamRunSmart.com. This report is a service of Shell Rotella.
We'll be right back with more Red Eye Radio with Eric Harley and Gary McNamara.
Hey, it's Red Eye Radio. Have yourself a great day.
This is Red Eye Radio on Westwood One.